So, back to our little comment.
Yeah.
If we have a case like someone who's making a film and found some footage, let's say, be on internet or even on film print, what can you do with that footage? What procedure is to be taken?
Well, copyright is a difficult subject in this area because it's what they call strict liability. This is to say, if something is protected by copyright, you need to get permission to use it. There are certain circumstances where permission isn't needed. For example, if you're making a news report or if you're commenting, making perhaps a parody or a satire on something, or making a review of a play or a poem or something like that, then of course you can use small parts for the purpose you want. But in the normal event, if you simply want to use some footage in your film, you need to get permission of the rights holders. So if material is found where the right owners are not clear, for example, if perhaps something from an old archive or something that you just find, or commonly nowadays something on the internet where it's not clear who's put it there or who the right holders are, then it's very difficult to know how to deal with this, because if you use it without permission, you are infringing copyright. And what's going to happen if your film is very successful and popular, and then someone comes along later and says, well, that was my footage, now I want payment? And that's a difficult situation. There are some proposals. Well, first of all, what I can say is there isn't really a practical, easy solution, because if something is protected by copyright, it's protected by copyright, and one shouldn't use it without the permission of the copyright owner. But there are proposals at the moment in several different countries to deal with this. They often refer to this kind of material as orphan works, because it's not known who the parents of it are, if you like, the right owners. And different countries have made proposals. For example, in the United States, there's a proposal that one should be able to use this kind of material, of course, after having made inquiries to see if you can find the owner. But if you can't, there are proposals that one should be able to use it and then not be liable for actually to pay damages if the owner comes to light later, but just to pay them a normal fee. That's one proposal. Other countries have made proposals that, for example, there should be some kind of fund, so that people who come forward later on and identify themselves as owners of these orphan works could be paid a reasonable fee out of a fund, so that you, as the film producer, having used the material when you didn't know, of course genuinely didn't know, who the right holder was, wouldn't be penalised in that way. But so far, none of these proposals have actually become a law in any country yet, so it's just ideas, because it's an enormously difficult area, and it's become much, much more important area than it used to be because of the internet, because there's so much material out there which is so interesting, where the right owner simply can't easily be identified.
Do you think that there is some legal aging of the footage, let's say after, I don't know, 50 years, the footage can be used?
Yes, well, the way a book, something really traditional, is protected by copyright has always been in the way that the copyright, or nearly always, in modern times anyway, since even the 20th century, that the book would have been protected for the life of the author, and then so many years after the death of the author, and this was 50 years always. Films, the way they've protected has been more complicated. Originally, films were protected simply for so many years after they had been first published or first shown in public, and this originally was small numbers of years, and then more recently it was 50 years after the publication of the film. But now this has changed in most countries, because films are, after all, regarded as works of authorship, and the director is, of course, the principal author, but there are other contributory authors too, like composers of music, the writers of the script. So nowadays films are also protected, like other works of authorship, for a number of years after the death of the author, or, of course, several authors, so that would be the last of them to die. And nowadays this number is 70. So today, a film would be protected for 70 years after the year in which the last of its authors dies. But as I say, with older film, that's not the case. Quite a lot of older film was protected for shorter periods. So it's certainly possible to find a lot of film material which is now not protected by copyright, older material so-called in the public domain. And this, of course, can then be used without permission at all because it's no longer protected.
Mm-hmm. Are there any differences between European and, let's say, American or other regions' law?
Yes, there are. I suppose for us, because of the Western culture and so forth, probably the most important differences are between Europe on the one hand and across the Atlantic, the United States, on the other. And there used to be a most enormous difference until the 1970s, which was that in America, any material to be protected by copyright had to be registered. Otherwise, it did not have copyright protection. That's never been the case in European countries. And so what this means is when you're looking at older material in the United States, much more of it is in the public domain than is the case in Europe. And the reason for that is because often people forgot to register or you had to renew the registration. Often people didn't do that. And anyway, the periods were shorter. So for historic material, film material, it makes a big difference. Also, it makes a difference in how material is used today. Because here, as I said a moment ago, we have certain conditions under which material can be used in a film without permission. For example, if it's a current affairs report or if it's reviewing material, something like this. In the States, the possibilities for using material without permission are wider. It's something called fair use. It's a special provision which they have under American copyright law, which we don't have in Europe. And basically, it means that it's possible, for example, if one is using small pieces of footage in one's documentary film, and the documentary film is a serious professional documentary commenting on serious subjects and so on, you will find that when you apply the American legal provisions in the United States, it'll be possible to use quite a number of extracts which here we wouldn't be able to use without getting permission. Of course, this is complicated in two ways, because it means that a lot of American documentary makers are surprised when they discover that material in the films they've made for consumption in the States is going to be infringing, or they're going to have to clear it when they want to exploit the films in Europe. And vice versa, it means that if we are making films for export to the US, it may mean that certain materials which we would certainly have to clear here, we may not have to. Mm-hmm.
So the basic instance or moment is showing the material openly to a public or...
Well, yes, this refers to what are called the copyright restricted acts. And if you're the copyright owner of your film, you have the power, if you like, given by the law, to permit or prevent other people from doing certain things with your film. And the first of them, of course, is copying. And when we're talking about... And then, of course, another one is performing in public. So when we're talking about a film, at the beginning of the process, it may especially if it's going to be exploited in some electronic form, for example, on the internet, the first aspect of that is, of course, the technical copying that's happening in the process before it ever comes to anybody's view. So you have the right to prevent that. And then, secondly, moving on, of course, the obvious copyright restricted act relating to a film is the public performance of it. Mm. So that, of course, is the principal one, and you have the right to restrict that. So, obviously, a broadcasting station would have to get permission before they can show your film. Public cinemas, theatres would have to have your permission. Of course, there are certain circumstances where that's not the case. If your film is available legitimately on DVDs for sale or hire, for example, your permission would be needed for that. But if I then were to buy the DVD and watch the film in the privacy of my home, I wouldn't need your permission as long as the DVD I've bought has been legitimately made.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about anti-copyright movements or Creative Commons licenses, yes, and such licenses?
Well, I think these are all attempts to try and produce a balance, because if copyright... I've started in the wrong place. to say the situation is that if you look back even a century and see what copyright was doing, it wasn't actually giving a person, an author, a total right to completely prohibit anybody access to the author's material. What it was doing was it was enabling the author to earn their living from their material, whilst balancing the fact that there are certain public interests in being able to have access to, in those days, of course, primarily written material, but now, of course, we're also talking about audiovisual material very much. An obvious case for this is the news. If the politician who makes a speech is able to prevent anybody from listening to it or from reporting it in any way in the media without getting his permission, he can control the news. Copyright could be like censorship. Now, that's always been prevented in copyright law by, for example, these exceptions that something can be used for citation or for reporting the current events and so forth. Now, what I think has happened is, as the actual media themselves have changed, and the printed media has so very much given way first to audiovisual media, and now the new media of the information society, the internet, and all the possibilities that that has, on the one hand, the possibilities for disseminating information have become so much amazingly bigger and better. And on the other hand, the possibilities to use material which ought to give the author a livelihood have also become much wider. So it seems to me that there's, I hope it's not putting it too high to say, a kind of battleground between those who are saying we need the freedom of information situation to adapt to the new society. It's not right that somebody who's put some material to be available digitally should have complete control over it. There should be similar safeguards for the public interest, which there were in the case of the printed word. And then on the other hand, there are the owners of especially very valuable productions like Hollywood studios and the music industry, with the pop music especially, who are saying, we want more control over these new mediums of dissemination, because look how people are file sharing, look how people are misusing our properties. And somehow it seems to me that we need a new balance, which is going to keep the avenues of public interest open, whilst at the same time allowing authors, obviously legitimately, to earn their livelihood from their production, because otherwise production of new exciting materials would cease. So somewhere there has to be a balance, and I think what's happening with the on the one hand, people like the Pirate Bay and so on, file sharing websites and so on, and then like you said, there's the efforts like the Creative Commons license and so on, organizations like Copyleft, and then of course another amazing phenomenon which is really changing things in a way that I don't think the law or even contracts are keeping up with, the social networking sites, where people are just putting material there which involves other people's material, and it's just there in enormous quantities. And on the one, and then right at the other end of the scale are the traditional big right owners like the film industry, American music industry, who are, it seems to me, fighting a slightly rearguard action in a way. And I think we're in the middle of seeing a new balancing, and I think it will be very interesting to see where it ends up.
Do you think that there is a future with public archives?
Well, yes. I mean, there are very interesting and big initiatives being made in many countries for public archives. It seems to me, speaking practically rather than legally, that the issue is funding, because obviously a commercial archive takes the money it earns to produce what all the big older archives with such interesting historic material need to do, is to digitize their material so that it's available in all the new methods of consumption, available easily to be sold over the internet and so forth. And available for use in all the digital productions. But of course they need the funding for that. So commercial archives tend to try and fund this as a rolling program of digitizing and restoring more and more old material, at least largely from their sales. So public archives, it's difficult. Where is the money going to come from? Very big organizations like the BBC have the resources to make some of their archive public. Other archives can be state-funded, but in this particular time, it seems that state funding is not fashionable and quite difficult to come by. And so certainly there are organizations which are, one of them is FIAT, for example, which is making big efforts to try and save old archives and to at the same time enable the public to have access to them. I recently saw a very interesting project in Japan being funded and pioneered by NHK, the national broadcaster, to make interesting historical material available to the Japanese public. And the way they were doing that, they're a commercial organization and have to make it pay. So they were making it available to the public in a limited way. People could go to a number of centers throughout the country and look at the material they wanted to for their own private research. But to actually obtain that material for use in a commercial production, you would have to buy it and pay for it. Mm-hmm. But they have a wonderful infrastructure of fibre optic cable and digital equipment and so on, which enables them to do that. Some countries haven't quite got to their level yet in that respect.
Mm. And maybe the last question, with the amounts of the material emerging every day, maybe archives will in future have to have new mission to select from this huge amount of material.
Very much so, yes. I mean, looking back even half a century, a key part of many countries' information policy, if you like, in the most general sense, was the deposit libraries, the British Library and other places like that. This is clearly going to be impossible, as you say. And also one has to ask another question too, apart from the sheer practicality, is it really appropriate that all the material that's being made available is necessarily stored and kept forever? Because one of the things that the new media explosion is doing is producing so much material which is, and it's clearly meant to be, ephemeral. It's just meant to be enjoyed for the day and gone tomorrow. And the creators make it with that in mind, and that's what the users want, and then they've moved on to the next thing. So the big question to my mind is who are the right people to make the decision about what should be kept and what should not be kept? Who is going to be the arbiter? Very difficult question, but clearly it has to happen.
Sure. Thanks.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Thank you.
Great. Oh, well, all the best of it.